The Center for Minorities in the Mathematical Sciences presents Mathematically Uncensored,
where our talk is real and complex, but never discreet. You are listening to Mathematically Uncensored, where our talk is real and complex,
but never discreet.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. We're going to have to switch it up. You're going to have to do the first part and I'll do the second part.
Okay,
so maybe we'll alternate every episode.
Alternate. We're not going to remember.
No, we're not.
No, yeah. No, not at all.
How's it going?
I'm hanging in there.
Now, last time you were struggling, you had taken your day and you had decided to do some work on it. Have you gotten your day back?
No.
Okay.
No. All right. My day is gone. My day, I was hiding it. I was living a glorious, glorious day. And then it has gone away.
Well, this time of the year, I was having this conversation with somebody else, but like mid-April, particularly for me, because taxes are usually due.
We're not talking about that right now.
I know, but you helped me. Remember you told me we had an extra month and I like hopped out of the, oh my God. But anyway, this time of the year, like, is always a nightmare. Stuff is ending and everybody wants something at the end of the semester and it's just overwhelming. So I was mentioning how I know this is going to happen and I need to prepare for for the end of the semester and get structures in place so that I'm not pulling my hair out every single year around this time.
But
like, I should just know better.
It's even worse this year, though, because I don't have a spring break.
Oh,
there's
right.
No spring break. And so what happened last week is that basically last week would have been one around the time when we would have had a spring break. And so I felt like I got hit by a ton of bricks because all of a sudden I don't have a spring break, which would have allowed me to reset, refocus, gather enough energy and momentum to like sail through the second half of the semester. So instead, I got hit by, you know, this train. And then it was like, oh, by the way, you can't recover because there's no end in sight right now. There's no break. There's nothing in between.
Yeah.
And so that hit me so hard.
So you felt it. You felt the absence of the break. Oh, that's interesting.
And then I even started talking to my students and I was thinking that we could extend maybe one of these like mental health days that we have off kind of scattered throughout. So basically what happened at Williams is we had now I'm going to say it out loud and it's going to hurt. We usually have a 2-week spring break.
Okay.
And it is the most glorious thing in the world because you actually can take a break. You can take a week off knowing that you have another in reserve.
Yes.
So this is why it felt so bad.
So wait, it went from 2 to 0?
It went from 2 weeks off to push the semester to starting later and then scatter two-day breaks somewhere throughout the semester. And so we have a two-day break on a Wednesday and a Thursday, I want to say, at the end of April. And so I just decided that I'm just going to extend it to the full week. And then I said to the students, if you want to meet, I can meet with you. We can do stuff. But let's assume that it is a break.
Yes.
And so I'm testing the waters to see what this 10-year life is like.
Yes.
Because I might be in a world of hurt once this comes public.
Yes. Well, we appreciate the sacrifice you're making.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, because what you're saying is that this matters. It matters having a break. Yes, because too long in my head, taking a break meant that I was doing nothing. But taking a break is recharging, doing something for yourself.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's stopping this rat race, right? Which is just like work. And then it's like, wait, when do you enjoy all of the benefits of you working so hard?
Yes. Yes.
Even to the point where you run yourself ragged and then you don't do anything well.
Right. So. Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And how are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. No, I got the second shot last Friday.
Yes.
So that's the end of that. Oh. And no, I mean, that's I'm feeling good, and it didn't hurt at all. So I guess I should say that out loud. Yeah, no, and it's been pretty pain free, and so yeah, so that's like the most immediate thing that's been happening. And then otherwise, like, I've just been trucking along with classes, just struggling with, like, again, trying to make the connection with students, because mm-hmm. we're mostly online, and just like still working on that as usual. So
ditto. Yeah. Well, we're hoping that people are recommending the show. Please tweet and post about the show. You can hit us up at Math Uncensored or at Minority Math. My handle is at DPE Harris, and then Eris is at Eris Winger.
And we got somebody who asked about some of the programming, which is great.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yeah, because they want to do something with the center. So I'm super excited about that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, there's the opportunity to do some programming. So if you're interested, we'll tell you a little bit more at the end during our announcement section.
Yeah.
All right. First topic of discussion. I'm so excited to talk to you about this, given some of the things that I've been living through. But the topic of discussion is credit. And I don't mean credit card, credit, debt. I'm
talking
That's a whole other episode. No, yes. We're talking about when we're working collaboratively, which is what we did last week.
Yes.
That was super cool. Who gets credit for the collaborative work? And what happens when credit gets assigned to someone when they ain't do shit?
This resonates with you?
Not at all.
Okay.
People that follow me on Facebook know what's up, or Twitter, they know what's up.
So what's the context?
Okay, so here's the context for the setup. Is the AWM put together these beautiful deck of cards in which they selected a set of mathematicians, women mathematicians, and they provide a short biography of the women. And then there's an artistic depiction presented by somebody in the mathematical community. Shout out to Joanne Beckford, who did a beautiful caricature of me. Yes. But let me tell you that in my biography, I got credited with being a co-founder for the Center for Minorities in the Mathematical Sciences.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, your shock is because I didn't do that.
Yes.
That shocked face is like, wait, what? You did who? What? No.
No, I appreciate
it. We know you didn't do shit.
I appreciate you sharing this. So you see this, and you see this, and then what are you thinking when you see it?
The immediate reaction I had was like, wait, what?
Yes.
And then I was like, what? No, I didn't do that. And then I had this like sheer panic.
Mm.
It was like panic because I thought, did they send me an email where I approved this biography with this like glaring factual error?
Yes.
Like immediately I thought this was my fault.
Yes.
Like I was like, I fucked up. And my friend, Dr. Michael Young, who started this center, is going to see this card and be like, this bee, she out here talking about how she highlights and does visibility work, bringing other people to the forefront. And she's over here claiming credit for something that was not of her doing. And so I literally had this like panic because I was like, no, certainly they passed this by me, right?
Right.
Like certainly the people that are putting together narratives about other people's lives asked for people's approval for said narratives. And so I kid you the hell not, I was like in my email searching everything, every corner possible.
Yes.
And it was like nowhere. So I was like, no, I never said this. And I was like, is it on my wiki page?
Right. Because, now you just started looking everywhere.
No, I mean, I can't even tell you the amount of time and energy that I was just like, I got to clear this up. I got to clear this up because I'm not going to take credit for something I didn't do. And then I was like, oh, wait, no, this wasn't on me. Like, I didn't do this. I didn't approve this. No one ran this by me. And in fact, when I was like, yo, who is telling this story about the work that I do or don't do? Like, why do other people get to set the narrative about me?
Yeah, no, that's big. So, yeah, I mean, that comes up. That feels like that comes up immediately. So we got to talk about narrative writing and about credit itself. And yeah, I wonder. I mean, so I get to be old, but I remember when, you know, there was this switch between now actually having a life, having your life put on the internet. There was a time in which there was no internet and I lived a life. And then all of a sudden I had to start Googling my name.
Right.
I'm setting myself up to get my ass kicked on the website again. But like, still, I had to Google my name and I'm looking around. I'm like, oh, this is up. This is up. And like, for me, you know, people know my story about my parents passing away earlier. Right. It took a long time for me to get used to that. And there was this article in the newspaper about it.
Yeah.
It was put on the internet. And for a long time, that was like, if I had told you that about me, that's how you knew that I was. It was like my litmus test. Like, I connect with you. Let me tell you about myself.
Right.
And then I had people coming up to me being like, oh, I'm so sorry about your parents when you were young and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is a whole new world I need to get used to. That people will now hear stories about me that I don't write.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So.
And then the narrative can change slightly, or even the choice of words that gets used can be quite insensitive, right?
Yes.
And I think that was also part of the thing that bothered me about this biography that was written about me. First and foremost, like the glaring, you know, mistake that no one seemed to even catch, or you know, apparently it went through some vetting and of course they all missed it. Then the fact that somebody else gets erased.
Yes.
The fact that also there's mention of me having been previously undocumented. And now I want to be clear about that, right? Like, I still have family who's undocumented. So I don't think that part of my life gets to be put on paper unless I say that's okay. And that pisses me off, because this is, after all, I'm a mathematician. And I get it. You want to put diversity, you know, of all kinds, of immigration status, of all of these things. But like, when do people realize that you might be putting my family at danger?
Yes.
And
yes,
and how about you just check with me that that's okay to do? And yes, I do talk about it. I do talk about it, but that's my story. That's my life. That's my right. Just like it's your right to talk about what happened.
Yes.
Right. So that's the thing that's like, it just feels real. Ugh.
Yes. And I'm wondering, though, about you as a historical figure. Right. So I guess that if this was like Harriet Tubman or Booker T. Washington.
Yeah.
Then people would go and write and make the card. Mm-hmm. Right. And one would imagine they would fact check. And I guess that like there is no fact checking and they can fact check directly with you. But now having thinking about this, I'm wondering that like, they want to write something about you as a historical figure. And so I guess in that context, people don't think about, let me go contact the person and have them. I also heard some notion of like that it puts more burden on you, as if now this isn't, you have a bigger burden now. Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. We don't want to bother you reading 10 sentences about yourself that we are going to publish out publicly to everybody that buys this deck versus, oh, let's see all the damage that now we've caused.
Yeah.
Because the other thing is this, right? People will read that card and they will assume that whatever is on it is true.
It's there forever.
Forever.
Yeah.
Forever. So I'm going to, moving forward, consistently correct people that I did not, in fact, co-found the Center for Minorities in the Mathematical Sciences. That was Dr. Michael Young.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the struggle, because who knows what talks you're going to give and someone's going to introduce you that way and you're going to have to correct them. And like, it's just, it is deeply unfortunate. But let me step back, of course, and say congratulations. They chose you, you know, like,
you.
And correctly, they chose you as a pioneer in so many different ways. And so, I mean, it's just unfortunate it was like sullied by this. Right?
It's cool. I'll get over it.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. And so, but in terms of giving credit, I mean, I'm of the mind. And again, I told you a couple of weeks ago that like I've just started to get in this big collaboration. Last week we talked about collaboration. So now let's continue that. So now we're collaborating, have a good time. It's you, me, 5-6 other people. And now you're contributing this, you're contributing this. I'm doing a little bit of something. Right. And then now it's time to write up something. Like, how is this going to go? Right. And so I've just been of the mind that I've been pretty lax about. And part of the reason is because like I'm not in a I got to get this published space.
Right.
And so that, I think that matters. So like when my name gets thrown on anything, like it's all, in a lot of ways, it's just bonus points. And like, it's, oh, good job, Harris. Yeah. Go teach something. So for me, if you put my initials on some shit, I'm just like, oh, that's great. Right. Yeah. So, but I know that in a space where people are getting tenure, raises, promotions, that this is important. Where your name goes, how much credit you give is a very serious business, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. It could derail your career. Right. And let me say a little bit about that, because when I was at West Point as a postdoc, there was a colleague there, and there's a fellowship that you apply that is from the National Academy of Science. And this was a fellowship that I had in which you work part-time, basically half of the year. One semester you're teaching at West Point. The second semester you're still at West Point, but you're supposed to be doing research with one of the Army research labs in the country. And so it's a very, like, it's a wonderful fellowship. It really allows you the opportunity to do both research and teaching, right? Meet new people, all of this wonderful stuff. Well, the people that vet, right? The selection committee that selects who these fellowships go to are not mathematicians. And I think one of the things that we've actually gotten right in mathematics, and we don't get a lot right, but you know what we have gotten right? The alphabetization of last names for authorship.
Yes.
And well, my friend's last name starts with a letter in the alphabet that ends right at the end.
Yes.
And so part of what happened was the people that were evaluating her work, they, in whatever field they were, I don't remember, as a science field, but not mathematics, they commented very, very, very negatively on her application that, well, she clearly must not be contributing to the science because she is always the last author.
Oh, wow.
So she straight up did not get her fellowship.
Unbelievable.
Because the culture is different in different sciences. And so they couldn't quite measure what her contribution was simply based because her last name was the last one. So she must have the smallest amount to have contributed because she wasn't first author.
Right, right. And so here we are with, so it's the first author piece and about, So how do we do this? How do we, and I guess I'm also thinking about how this matters for us as people of color, because if we don't get credit and then we, again, we're in these spaces where I've been like, so I'm in a space where I've been trained to have on the mask, to be docile. Mm-hmm. That's how it used to be, to just to behave. Mm-hmm. But then what happens when there's something that I know I did and it's got to be corrected? Then I got to go out of this space and say, no, I did that.
Yes.
That's hard. I mean, it's hard for us to have to do that in a space where it's just like, you know, we're already not that welcome to begin with.
Yeah, because then
now
you're
trying to say credit.
Right. No, but then you're like a credit hoarder, right? Like you're sort of going against the standard or the norms of the profession, which is like, well, you collaborated and I guess you take number of authors, right? And you calculate the percentage that you contributed. But we know that's not how it works. And in fact, you know, funny story, when I was gearing up to go for tenure, I remember having a conversation with a colleague and asking straight out, like, what is considered more positively, you know, pieces that I co-author with my students at Williams or work that is collaborative with other, you know, mathematicians external to the department or to the campus. And then this person said to me, oh, we love publications. You know, they like to say this, we love publications, you know, as long as they're good research, you know, that's good. But yeah, if you publish with students, we know that you're the one writing the paper.
Mm.
And then I was like, wait, what? I must be doing it wrong. Because, because I'm not just like being like, dear student, I'm going to put your name on this paper. Are you okay with that? No, it's like back and forth. We're doing the math. We're editing the paper. You write this part. I edit. I write this part. You edit. Right? Like it's this.
You mean you're writing a paper with them?
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But apparently that's not what other people do. And so there's something really unspoken about what it means to collaborate and then how people attribute this credit. It's like completely behind the scenes. It doesn't mean the same thing to everyone. And so I think if we're not having these conversations about what credit means, or, you know, what it means to be a co-author on this paper, then everyone gets to interpret it in whatever way they want.
Yeah. What in the world? what an interruption of this look like? I mean, because it's too much ego involved, too much, you know, oh, I did this, you did that, I deserve more, right? And look, I get it, particularly for marginalized people in this discipline, women, people of color, and so forth, that, right, I mean, it's already enough, right? And yeah. then we have to fight for and say, and then when we do that, people might be like, who are you? Like, why yes. are you being so loud about this?
Yes.
Right? Yeah. No, this is hard, right? I mean, because you can't in the abstract say, oh, this is 40% Pamela and 30% Aris and, you know, 30% Michael, right? We're not yeah. doing that because yeah. those numbers don't mean anything.
Yeah.
Right. So,
and I think that might be okay. So, there's something really interesting there that I haven't really thought about at length. So, there are times where you and I are having a conversation and it'll, yeah. you'll say something that triggers a new idea.
Yes.
I wouldn't have had that idea had it not been for everything you prefaced the conversation with.
That's right. Give me my credit.
And
that's
so, right. so, yeah. but if I'm the one that set the idea without giving you credit, it's like I'm erasing yes. everything you just did.
Yes. No, that's
right. But how do we put the value on those things that trigger the right idea, the right movement, right? And so that's why maybe this is why I kind of like the idea of keeping the authorship basically just alphabetically. We all understand that that's how we're going to do it. Because we understand that in mathematics, we could be having a conversation and one of us could be doing something that just never pans out. But what it did is it eliminated all of those possible branches of the problem. It's like all of those are dead end. And if it happens that I say to you, I've tried all of these things and none of those work, you're not going to spend a year working on that because you trust that I already checked it and that method doesn't work. So you'll try a new one and maybe that one works. And maybe that's the technique that we need to prove the theorem.
That's right.
So does that mean I didn't contribute shit?
No, you did.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so that's hard.
Yeah, no, so that's great because I think this helps me, you know, flesh out why I have the stance that I do because it all matters. Like, mm-hmm. because to your point, you just articulated it perfectly the way I think about it because if I'm working with somebody, it's over. Like, yeah. I'm not, if I got anything, you're in, your name's on it, done deal. And partly because because leaving somebody off is way more work. And way more traumatic and way more emotional, you know, because you can't gauge how somebody's small contribution, you know, led to all these other things that were possible. And you gave a great example where it seems like someone's done nothing when in fact they've done a lot in the doing of that. Yeah. So I'm usually, you know, I've been on papers with 8, 9, 10 people. Right. And I know at some point they all said something and I'm good. That's it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Yeah. And so what happens in those cases where you're not given credit though? Right. Like, do we fight for it? And how do we do that?
Yeah. So again, as we've been saying from episode 1, that you have to tread carefully. Right. Yeah. It is just as a person of color in this space. Right. You have to find where you're going to pick your battles. Now, what I'm hearing, though, is that we're talking about a career.
Yeah.
Right. And so now we have to figure out, OK, wait, I need to get credit for this. I did this because you might be going up for tenure and you need to get this because for me personally, I can't keep walking down the hallway and hearing somebody else getting credit for something that I did. Like, that's hard, right? Because you put in the work, the effort, and everything. So it depends on the context. Like if I hear somebody say, it's so hard. I'm imagining this is the scenario now, and I don't think I would be able to do it. Like I'm in the faculty lounge, right? Yeah. I'm in the faculty lounge, and me and person A have been working on something. Well, person B, I'm person A. Me and person B have been working on something.
Credit, you're A.
That's right. We have been working on something and it just got published, blah, 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 whatever. And then, you know, department comes in and says, oh, person B's been working really hard on this. Everybody, look at what person B did. What in the hell am I going to say?
Yeah, that don't feel good.
I know. It's just no. And you know what? I don't feel bad. I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to be like, I wrote that too.
But wait, is person B in the room? Because
person B's not there. Person B's not there.
Okay.
Person B's not there. No.
I was about to, you know, slap.
That's
person
right. No. B. because it's good that you bring this up, because person, and I don't think I do this, because I think with the people, it's been pretty good, the people I've written with, but person B and I already have some sense of understanding,
right,
that because both of our names are on it, that would never happen. Person, right. Neither one of us would be in a room, right? And you and I understand this, obviously, yeah, for the book, right?
Yeah.
So like, yeah, so I mean, but I'm trying to figure out, could I muster and say, hold up, I probably do something on the sly, right? I'm saying, yeah, me and person B really worked hard on that.
I love it.
Oh, person no. B and I, I probably would do that exactly. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, because I'm just like, I'm getting in there somehow, but I don't have to be like, yo, me too. But I'm like, yeah, we worked hard on
that. So, but that's okay. I like this scenario kind of role playing, but let's think about a different one. What happens? Okay. What happens if, you know, I'm person A now, I'm person A, and there's person B, and I did something, and you know I did something, but you weren't involved in this thing. You just know because you and I talk.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, person C starts telling everyone that person B did the thing you know I did.
Oh, that's great. Yes. So what do you this do then? Is good. No, this is good. So I probably, and I didn't realize I was this much on the sly about a lot of shit. I didn't
this
realize
is great. This
until
this
you bring,
is so
but
great.
No, I would still bring it up on the sly and say, yeah, I know that person B and person A work really hard on that together.
No, but wait, no. I'm sorry. I misled you. Okay. Person B had nothing to do with it. This was just me.
Oh, wait, what?
Like
so
somebody,
it's completely, oh.
It's like somebody went and wrote a card for a game and said, you know, Pamela did this work, and you know it was not Pamela.
Yes.
But they're giving me credit for it. So,
yes,
like, do you correct the AWM's card?
Yes. No. So that's a good question. So let's just be clear. I'm going to put myself right in the situation. If I'm at the JMM and I see these cards and I see, and I see this, I'm probably going to talk to Michael. I'm probably going to talk to Michael first.
Okay.
And see what he wants to do. Because, yeah, I mean, but that depends. Like, if I'm at the AWM meeting or gathering, and then these cards are out, and then Amy's standing right next to me, I'd be like, yo, Amy, this shit is wrong. Like, I might just say it immediately. Like, I won't. Like, it's just like, it just depends on the context.
On the context
where,
and who it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but there's this issue of, you know, letting people have the right to take the credit whenever they want to.
Ooh.
And it's like, you know, if somebody doesn't want the credit, you probably should have a conversation with me. Because I'm going to be fighting for you to get the credit because of my own experience and how I feel about people of color and credit and deserving recognition. We've been so, I mean, a part of the story of our existence in this country as people of color is that we don't get credit.
Yeah.
How much credit has been taken from us from all the stuff? You see that stoplight you stopped at? A black man created that fucking stoplight. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And there's not enough credit given around. So I have an inclination, and this may be wrong, but like to be like, yo, that person of color did that. I'm telling you now.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm just going to get in trouble. So all these people out there, if you don't want me to give credit for something you did, you should write me an email. MU at Minority Math, because people need to get their credit, because it's the same thing about being paid.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, you need to be paid for your time. Why? Because people of color have been doing labor for $0 for centuries.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I don't have any time for so the same thing. Give us our credit. Give us our money. Give us, for our time and efforts. Please, please, please. So I can be on the low. You just need to let me know, right?
Yeah.
If you do something great, to say, Eris, I did this thing. Don't tell anybody. I'm good then. But otherwise, I'm singing your praises because that's what it sounds like to me, right?
Yeah.
And I know
no,
that
I
may be
you.
Wrong for some people, but that's how I lean.
Yeah. And I think we're back to this idea then of who gets to set narratives.
Yes.
Right? Who gets to set these narratives, and how much do we actually think about the fact that we are setting narratives, right? Because I also, you know, mea culpa, is that how you say it? I don't even know. I always try though. I try.
You try.
But you know, when this whole thing with the card came up, like I didn't want to say Michael Young's name, because he's not one to go around and like tell everyone, look at me, I did this thing.
Yes, in the center. That's right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, but I also fucked up because then I play AMS, a black mathematician card.
Yes.
You know, I'm like, fuck, Pamela, come on, you can do better. And so, but yeah, I struggle a lot with being the one that sets narratives for other people. And I think what you're saying here to me is making me change my mind. In the sense that, you know, as long as it's factual and it's something, something that's factual and something that in fact is highlighting the work of other people.
Yes.
I mean, I struggle. I still feel like people should get to set their own narratives and put out into the public whatever it is that they want to put out when it's their work and it's close to their heart. But at the same time, it's like also the omission is also not okay.
Absolutely right. Yeah. And again, I had no problem. Like if we had gone the next 20 years and nobody knew that Michael had created the center, fine. Just don't say anybody else did.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying. Right. Oh, and we would have been fine. Yeah.
Also, can I point out that this is not going to be the first time or the last time, right? Yeah. That we as people of color experience that other people set narratives for us. And let me just point out to this beautiful little reference that Adriana Salerno put together that is published, I believe, in the AMS Inclusion Exclusion blog, which is called Four Parts to an Apology. Okay, ooh. Listen. People need to read that shit. That blog is so good. It literally breaks it down easy peasy for you to say you are sorry. Okay? Because some of these non-apology ass things that I received are just not okay. You don't just say, well, we hold editorial privilege on your biography.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
I wish people could see me blinking right now. Like blink, oh blink, my God. Blink, blink.
Wow. That is unbelievable.
That's not an apology. So
absolutely not.
So fam, check it out. For part of an apology, Adriana Salerno, another wonderful woman of color out here in this math community making change.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's
They have editorial privilege. It's
editorial privilege.
It's their game. It's their game. It's their game. They did me a favor putting me on there. I can't complain because the second I complain, ain't nobody going to feature me in shit because that's how it goes.
Well, yeah, no. And that's
how it goes.
See, and this, you know, when we try and, you know, be friendly, see what see, yeah.
Let's not go off to left and to left field.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah. No. Well, I'm sorry that happened. Yeah. No, this has just been. OK. All right.
Thanks, friend.
Yeah. Yes, of course, of course, of course, yeah.
So we're going to, but you know, the one thing that I do want to say about this credit thing is I think we have to speak up, right? Like if you see that someone's getting credit for something that they didn't do or something that you did, you know, just clarify. And I think Eris gave us some kind words like, yes, yeah, it was great. I did a lot of work for that too, right? Like we don't have to, I don't know, fight so hard maybe, but just a sly comment in passing, I think could be all that it takes, but it is work. And I acknowledge that the emotions that go along with it, sometimes it's very difficult to separate, right? Yeah. Like to be able to just kind of, I don't know, not feel so affected by it because lately everything just feels like such a big fight.
Absolutely. Now look, we got our marginalized people, these graduate students. Oh my goodness. Who are doing a ton of work
so
with
much
their
work.
Advisor.
Yep.
Oh yeah. Before, and then what happens when the paper comes out?
Oh, their
hopefully their
name
gets
up.
On it. Oh,
oh
yes.
And maybe.
That's right.
Maybe their name shows on.
That's right. That's exactly right. What do we say to those people? They just jumped in my head that, you know, all right. So we talked about this again from day one that it's hard being a graduate student, right? And we're working on that, by the way.
Oh,
trying
to
make it easier. We'll tell you about those projects later about being a graduate student of color in mathematics. But now you're doing this work and, you know, you're under somebody and you're working hard, right?
Yep.
And their name may go first and they get the credit. And then and then as we know, as you've already said, that people already think that the advisor did all the work anyway.
Absolutely.
And it's just attaching your name.
Yeah.
Right. And so are we just supposed to eat it? Is that what's happening for the next 4 years? Is that how it goes? Right. So I don't have an answer to that.
I
but
don't
that's
either.
MU at Minority Math. How is it that we can get some more visibility
Yeah.
for our graduate students who may be in the shadows? you know, doing this work. And that's, this is not just in math too. This is in other disciplines where it may be even worse, where it's just like, you're just doing a bunch of stuff.
The thing that occurs to me really quickly about this is I'm thinking back to my own PhD advisor who my very first, you know, publication was a solo authored publication. And it took me years to understand why he let me kind of, you know, swim in the deep end for a long time. You know, he didn't help me write it. Like the editing was traumatic because I didn't know what I was doing, you know. And but when I finally published that paper, you know, he was just like, no one will have a reason to think that I wrote that paper.
Oh, with your name so on powerful.
It. You know, and it's been out of all my publications, like I have two solo authored publications. One was that one. And one was right before, well, my first year on tenure track when I thought, oh, I've been doing a lot of collaborative work. Maybe these people need to know that I can write my own papers. And so I wrote a paper on my own. And so, yeah, this is really difficult, but I wonder if there's room for PhD advisors to really reconsider. And let me say my PhD advisor at that point, I believe at that point when that paper came out, my solo paper, my solo authored paper for my PhD, he was still a junior faculty member.
So, oh, so he needed that.
So he probably, I mean, he good, you know,
he good.
He probably didn't need that one, but he could have.
Right.
He could have. And so at what point do we, you know, folks that are overseeing PhD students, at what point do you put your students first, even above your own professional development and potential career trajectory? And I don't know that I have the answer, but I'm just saying, like, you should be thinking about that shit.
Yeah, that is something to consider, right? And maybe, you know, students should start asking and thinking about that when they pick an advisor to say how and look at their papers and see, you know, and look at their students' papers and when
ask the previous students.
Yeah.
Right? Like, did you write your solo author paper or like, did you write it and the advisor, like, how did that work? Just ask questions. How did that work?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's right. That's great. Great. I'm glad we were able to get that out.
All right. Let's think about this question we got in the mailbag. So
yes, thank you all for participating in that.
Yeah, we love getting your emails. Like, let me just say that when we have our production meetings, we read your emails, we go through them, you know, and we have very heated discussions about emails. And so one question that came up, Daniel Otero sent us an email asking about this kind of balance between being able to care for students, care about mathematics and the work that we do, and the self-care aspect of being a mathematician and a mathematics professor.
Yeah.
Like, how do we balance all of this?
Yeah, no, at the end of last semester, I was talking about this story about this student, you know, in the time of COVID, who just sent me this cryptic message at the end and said, oh, I missed the final. Can I have more time?
Mm-hmm.
And the name of that episode was End of Semester Grades Turned In or something like this. And so, yeah, I mean, when I was thinking about this, I was thinking about that, just like, you know, going to the, you know, registrar or whatever, and making the phone call and saying, no, I want to give this person an incomplete instead, filling out the form, right? In the midst of pure exhaustion, right?
Yeah,
it makes me think of this balance. Like, could I have somehow done something different, right? And then as I go through this semester now, really trying to protect myself, who I am, you know, overworked in a lot of ways, while also still trying to uphold my highest ideals of doing, because the bottom line is that this is for the way that I'm trying to roll. This is not 80% means somebody's not getting the best of me.
Yeah.
And so like, so I'm trying to think of balancing. How can I think of balancing as not leaving somebody out?
Yeah.
How can I think of balancing and like taking care of myself when so much of me being a teacher is being a servant?
Yes.
Serving other people, so that now if I'm somehow saying, let me go do this, that I'm not being a servant, I'm not serving people. And therefore people are there who I need to reframe all of that. Right. That I need new wording. So MU at minorlearningmath.org, because I can't get out of the mentality that if I'm not around, then that means people are not being helped who need to be helped. And that means that I can't balance correctly, right? Because my self-care is in opposition to somebody's needing to be helped, right? And
I need to
rewrite that.
Fight you on that.
No, you're right. No, you're right. And I know that's wrong, right? That I need to, that, but that's where I am, that I've got to, remove this false dichotomy.
Yes, yes, yes.
That, yes, it's a false dichotomy that I've been operating as the truth and that I need to be interrogating. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. The one thing that strikes me in this is thinking about how we balance based on what is valued in the work that we do.
Mm.
And so I struggle a lot with this because being at this institution, you know, where we uphold academic excellence, both in scholarship and in teaching.
Yes.
I'm like, wait, where does serving our community, where does my DEI work, where does the impact that I have on people outside of my institution, where is that counted in what I do? And so there's something really interesting here, because when we were talking about credit, we're talking about like, we don't get paid to do that kind of work, right? Like my institution, at least, and please correct me if I am wrong, but when I think about the salary that I receive every 2 weeks, I think Williams pays me to do the work that benefits the students at Williams, that helps my department advance in whatever direction, that pays for me to be doing research, right? Yeah. That pays for some of the service that I do out in the math community. But there is so much other work that I do, right? Yes. Like when an institution invites me to come and give a talk, if it's a math talk, I'm like, cool, that's part of my job. Let me talk about juggling, right? Let me talk about vector partition functions, like all day long, parking functions. But if all of a sudden they want my life story because it's going to be inspirational to their students, I guarantee you, it has never failed me. And I love it, right? Like this is why I do this work, that I connect with their students.
Yes.
I connect with students all over the country. I go visit, you know, or virtual, and I hang out. And then guess what? They send me emails. You know, I had an email from a pre-service student. They're doing their teaching, right? Yeah. Like student teaching. Can you meet our classroom of third graders? And I'm like, okay, I just met you, but like, yes, let's see how we can figure it out. I'm like figuring out like, you know, 30-minute little slots in my schedule. And then, you know, the students, then their third graders are emailing me questions. And now I'm emailing their third graders, you know, and then the mom finds out that the AWM runs a competition on a essay for the middle school kid. And then they email me to interview. Like, this is a snowball effect that gets quite large. And so part of what I struggle a lot with, like the balance, when people say like, tell me about your job. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know where my job ends. I don't know where my personal life begins. Like it is all a web that is so tightly spun that I can't tell you where the thread is.
Yes. And so
when somebody says to me the word balance, I'm like, I want to scream into the void. Like, what balance?
Right.
And so I struggle a lot with that.
Yeah. Well, what is balance, right? I mean, it's like, I mean, so when I think about the areas of my life right now, it's work, family, friends, and then, right? And then maybe personal health, right? It's just like trying to work on those things. And so, like if we're talking about which one of those things are we doing at any one time in terms of the balance, but then even when you're in the profession itself, balancing what you're supposed to be doing and then what you, it sounds like this extra stuff you've got, how are you balancing that as well, right? So there's like balance within the discipline as well, because how are you supposed to say no?
No, and I'm not going to, right, that's the thing, right? Like, people are like, well, you could just say no. And then I'm like, you don't understand, like, this is the stuff, like, I feel great joy in being able to, like, have a conversation with a third grader who's never, you know, who talks to me in Spanish, you know, and it's like, you know, and I like, I could show you, like, a envelope. I don't know if you can see these papers stacked here. Those are letters from the third grader. They all sent me handwritten letters.
Oh, you're gonna make me cry.
I was crying.
Yes, crying.
Just like bawling, reading their, like, thank you for teaching, you know, taking time out of your day. And I'm just like bawling, crying. And I'm like, my institution, you know, this is like invisible. Like to my institution, and I think this happens to a lot of us, to a lot of people of color, that we do so much work outside of our institutions because we know that we matter outside of these institutions way, sometimes way more, to be quite honest, because we're often taken for granted at the places we work. We're often thought to be the troublemakers. Remember, we've talked about civility,
right?
But then the second that you step elsewhere, people treat you so much better. Like people yes. see you as a full human being rather than somebody who's just like pointing out issues within the structures at an institution. And yes. so if your institution is not giving you credit for the kind of work and the kind of impact that you're having, like, what do you do?
Yes, right.
Like,
right.
And that's the thing that I'm just like at a loss. And so hit me up. MU right. at minoritymad.org. Let me know how to handle it because I'm at a loss. Right.
No, and this is a walk that your people of color have to deal with in particular. And we talked about this on the CORE project. I think it is minoritymad.org/CORE.
Yeah.
I think you can go there and get information about that project. But we're talking about that. You know, there's so many things that we come from and that we end up doing as people of color that don't see the limelight.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and it is just like you said, this mentoring, this being a role model, this mm-hmm. all of this that is ours and ours and being a representative that you just. Yeah. That is nowhere to be found in the 10-year portfolio.
Yeah.
Right. Nowhere to be yeah. found. And so how do we bring light to that? How do we start giving credit for that? You know, that's part of the question that we have to start asking.
Yeah. And I think I'm hopeful that folks that listen and folks that are in positions of power are really starting to think about designing metrics that yes. are evaluating professional mathematicians, right?
Yes.
And
yes.
and using these kinds of things to measure the impact of their work.
Absolutely. And these are good questions. We have no idea how to do that.
That's right.
And that doesn't mean that we shouldn't do it.
That's right.
I'm just so tired of people saying, well, we've never done that or we don't know how to do that. So let's not do it. Right.
Yeah.
So then put all those theorems away, that those conjectures, throw those away too. Right. Yeah. I mean, if there's some problems. Yeah, that's right. If you have some problems you haven't figured out yet. Right. And you're trying to solve those. Here's another one. How do we value other things other than what you already have written down on paper?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. Ooh, 5% change. Where are you at so, with your 5%? Yeah, game?
So I made the phone call for the student to get the change, to get her some language. I had that mm-hmm. student with the language issue. Yeah, yeah. So
yes.
we're working in Pearson, and so I've contacted Pearson. So I'm working on that. And then, yeah, I'm working on the Zoom issue. I'm trying to find out, like, you might not believe it, but like the Padlet issue, I think I'm going to bring them hardcore in my classrooms. I don't uh-huh. use them in my classrooms as much as I want to, but I'm going to try. And so the challenge I have now is, how am I going to do this in April?
Right?
It just feels like so out. Yeah. It just feels so like contrived late to be like, yo, let me try something new. Cause now we're just trying to survive. Right. So maybe,
but that's, you know, when you try something new, when you need to survive.
Yes. That's a good point.
We need to survive. Yeah.
But I think I'm thinking about what you just did. Well, you already have built in it, Williams. Maybe we just need to take a relaxed day.
You might just need to take a relaxed
day. And just be like, you know what? Yeah, but I want to do it together. I want us to just get on there and be like, you know what? We're not doing this. We're just chilling today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I'm going to really get in trouble. But yeah.
I mean,
so
you and I together today.
Right. So I've just been thinking about that.
Yeah. And so you were also telling me last time we spoke about this 5%, you know, we talk about it a lot in a lot of the professional development work that we also do together, and that you were reading about it being scientifically supported. So you might want to tell our listeners about that.
Wait, what are you talking about? I forget. Wait.
We were talking about this, that you were reading this article about how incremental change is really the only way to.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. That's right. Yeah, 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 yeah. So, yeah. So, 5% works? You mean 5% works? Oh, yes, yes, yes. So, if you got a big goal, and I kind of knew this then.
Mm-hmm.
So I read all these books about these types of things. But when you have this big goal, it's better to break it into pieces if you're going to achieve the goal. But even if you don't know what the goal is, you know, in the big sense, just making little steps towards it is always better than doing nothing. And as a matter of fact, so we've actually had the 5% like validated that like the 5% and the compounding actually is going to work. So here's the deal. And so that's nice that it's scientifically, you know, verified. But we also know that, you know, if you're not doing the 5%, if you're not working on this every day, then you're not on our side.
That's right.
I love y'all, but, you know,
peace
I
out.
Love my enemies. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's just part of it. Yeah. So just working every day. And that means this constant interrogation. Like, yo, is that right? Yeah. So it's like I walk around with my brow furrowed all day long. Look at my face. It's like, yeah, wait, is that okay? Is that okay? Yeah. So 5%, let's keep at it. Right. And that doesn't mean, one of the things I didn't want is I didn't want that to sound like that you just got to be, you know, taxed working every day. Is that for me, it really is, again, just bringing up the question.
Yeah.
Just adding a question to our practice. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Or wait, does that work for everybody? Who might get left out? Right. Just asking the question and then saying, you know, in that space of asking the question and saying, well, what can I do to make sure that it kind of like is a little bit better? Yeah.
Well, implementing that for me was nerve-wracking this past week, because what I did is I started asking my students for feedback on the feedback I was giving them.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So here's what I did. I implemented a new way to give my students feedback on drafts of manuscripts that they're working on. So it's a research-based course. There's 10 students in the class. They're broken up into pairs and they're collaborating, writing a paper.
Yeah.
And okay. So I usually just mark up the PDF and then I send that to them, right? Kind of like a scanned version of my handwritten notes. And I decided that I was going to use technology to my advantage and then do it live. So basically, I would record the Zoom meeting so that they could hear me think out loud as I'm marking up their PDF. And then I sent them both the PDF and the video. And then I said, I was really nervous because when I'm thinking in front of students, I tend to be a little bit more cautious with my words. You know, so if I'm confused by something, I might ask the student, can you tell me what you meant to say here?
Because
I read it and I didn't understand. And then the student will chat back and forth and then I'll figure it out. And I say, oh, I think we might rewrite this way. Well, when it's just me, I think I'm just a big old dummy. And I'm like, what is this? And then I'm like, oh no, the students are going to listen to this and be like, oh, she thinks our work is garbage.
Yeah.
Right? And so I was like, so cautious in like how I was trying to give feedback where I was like, this doesn't feel right. And so then I was just like, this is the uncensored version, right? So like just unpolished, not thinking too much about it. Just give them the feedback, give them the video, give them the PDF, tell them to have the PDF there and they can hear what I say if they need any more clarity.
Yeah.
And so I got their feedback and the feedback seemed to be more positive than negative.
Great.
I forgot to send them the PDF and they were like, well, it was nice to have just the PDF. And I was like, wait, I sent that. They were like, no, you didn't. But I never asked, I wouldn't have known that I forgot the attachment.
Absolutely. Absolutely right.
So that was a good lesson.
It's funny, it's one thing, I don't know why we didn't mention this when we talked about feedback, but mathematicians give feedback in a particular way.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I've had the honor of, you know, having some very interdisciplinary projects with mathematicians and non-mathematicians. And just there have been some issues there in terms of how we communicate, because we will tell you if shit ain't right. And we will say it like, that's wrong.
That's wrong.
Yeah, no, but other people in other disciplines are just like, that's rude, right? Like the way that you said that. Yeah. Oh, look at your face. No. Sometimes, see, I'm on the other edge because, you know, I believe I'm big on words and phrasing how you're supposed to say stuff, you know, so that everybody's valued at all times. So like, you know, my upbringing as a mathematician, I used to be like that. Like, no, that's wrong. And I was told I was wrong. No hard feelings at all.
Right.
But yeah, no, we should see how we would not survive in the real world going out talking to people like this. People would think that's we were so just funny. Crazy. Yeah. No. Woo! Yeah. I just thought of that because like you were saying, you know, as the teacher, you were saying, wait, what is this? And your status carries that to a completely different place.
Yes. Yeah. And I think being able to have these conversations with you has taught me that, right? Because normally I would just be like, this theorem is false, dear student. Here's a counterexample. Keep working at it. And then I would just be like, close the door, on to the next meeting. Right?
And that is perfectly fine in the math context on its own between two mathematicians, perfect.
Absolutely.
But a vulnerable student who holds you in high regard hears those words.
I know.
Yeah. But this is not for you. This is for everyone. I'm talking to everybody.
Yes.
So all the people who are teaching, please be aware that what is normal in our discipline in talking to each other, a student or someone else may take that as something completely different.
Yeah. Yeah, so. The tone is killer sometimes.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
Ooh, so lots of work there to do on our 5%. But hey, every time we implement something.
That's right. We try to keep it moving.
All right. Well, I'm really excited about these announcements.
Okay.
Let me tell you about this workshop. So we mentioned that during the last episode. And so we're running the first, I believe, is the very, very first ever DEI workshop.
Let's
for REU directors and faculty Ooh. Mentors.
Okay.
And so this workshop is really to help them figure out how to best support students of color.
Yes.
So I'm really excited. This REU is going to run May 22nd. There's going to be an amazing crew of speakers. So let me tell you about that. So Sarah Sword is coming on to tell us about the core project, which you've mentioned. So you can check that out at minoritymath.org/core. That'll tell you about that project. And really, the idea is to tell us about the work that has been uncovered in these interviews of underrepresented minority, either incoming graduate students or graduate students and early career faculty, and what it is about them, about the graduate programs, about their experiences in these mathematical spaces that have either helped them succeed or hindered them from succeeding in mathematics. So we're going to, I mean, this is literally research that is taking place right now, and we have the opportunity to learn from Sarah.
To learn from that. Yes.
Yeah, to learn about these lessons.
And she is absolutely fantastic. So.
Yeah, I'm super excited. And then we have Carol Bennett, who's coming from Youngstown State University. She's going to talk to us about her PhD research. So she's a PhD candidate, and she's working on stereotype threat and how that affects students of color in STEM disciplines.
Fantastic.
And so she's going to give us that perspective in the mathematical sciences, all while also giving us very concrete advice on how to build community so that students of color thrive at these REUs. And so be on the lookout for that programming. We also have Abby Hersegg. So she is the director of education at AMS. She's coming on board to tell us about the science of mentoring. And so I'm excited about that. So Abby and I did a similar presentation for MSRI recently. Yeah. And really the concept there is that you should be mentoring not just to push the boundaries of mathematical discovery, but really you need to be mentoring students also for the culture and the norms of the profession. And we've been talking about that the whole time today.
That's beautiful. Yes, right? Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then the third piece in that talk is going to be building identity. So how do you build mathematical identity through mentoring? And so she'll be focusing on that. And then Alicia Prieto Langarica and I are giving a presentation on mentoring collaborations. So a lot of the times you have people mentoring, right? Like on their own, a group of students. And one of the things that Alicia and I have done very well, both her and I together, but also her with her collaborators and I with my collaborators, is figure out how to leverage our networks to really mentor students from any kind of background, right? Yes. If we don't know the answer, we know someone who will, and we create mentoring teams.
I love that. And yeah.
And so let me give you the website. Please register. I expect you to be there, friend. And everyone.
Are you talking to me? Yeah. Oh, I'm there.
Oh, okay. Yes, yes, yes. Okay.
When is it? So have you given the date?
May 22nd. So you got to put this on your schedule. And
I have my phone out right now. Go ahead.
May 22nd. And the registration is live. So if you're listening to this, you can go to this website and register for the event. It is minoritymath.org/REUDEI workshop 2021.
That's perfect.
So REUDEI workshop 2021 is the ending part of the minoritymath.org. And then we mentioned this last time, and we've gotten some traction. We're so excited that people in the community are interested in organizing workshops that are sponsored by the Center for Minorities in the Mathematical Sciences. Please, please send us your ideas, your proposals. If you have an idea for a one-day workshop or maybe a shorter program that you would like to run, contact@minoritymath.org is where you should send that email.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We meant what we said on the first day. We're trying to change the discipline and have our voices at the center. And this is a way to do it.
That's right.
I am hyped for this workshop.
Listen, I'm so excited. And also, yes. You know, let me be really clear, because if people are listening and they're like, oh, I'm going to show up and just listen, the hell you are.
No.
You're going to show up having done some pre-reading, some pre-assignments. You're going to show up. You're going to learn more. You're going to go home with some homework, things that you're going to implement into your REU this summer.
That's right. And then
you're going to report back to us and tell us how it went. And once you do all of that, we will issue you a wonderful certificate of participation.
Are you serious?
I am messing around.
What?
We are here. That is fantastic. Yeah, we are here
to
change. Like you said, we're here to change the discipline. And so we're hoping, you know, we're trying to really make sure that people implement the things that we're saying are coming from the science. From the research, right?
Yes.
You heard me say this. These are things, you know, I use the word science. I use PhD dissertation research. I use, you know, NSF funded research. You know, these are not anecdotal things that we're just like, well, you might try this. No, no, no. These are things that are backed by actual people doing research. And we want people to implement them and really just make their REUs better.
Yes, absolutely. And this is an untapped place.
Yeah.
Where I was in an REU. And so, yeah, I know a lot of people of color who use REUs as a way. I mean, I went to CMU, Carnegie Mellon, for an REU. And in a lot of ways, that's when they got to know me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it is not a coincidence that I ended up going there for my PhD. Right.
Yeah. That's
and
right.
So, but even more so than that, you know, what we're learning in the core is that, you know, when you go to these REUs, you're now making a relationship with these directors. And I know you're going to get that point across, that this is not a relationship that's just for a summer.
That's right.
Right. Yes.
That is absolutely correct.
So, yeah, I'll be there. I wouldn't miss it for anything.
Awesome. All right. There's some other workshops coming up.
Yeah, we also have the MSRI workshop on mathematics and racial justice. We got a bunch of heavy hitters here. Dwayne Cooper, Caleb Ashley, Ron Buckmeyer, Monica Jackson, Omira Ortega, Robin Wilson. That's a crew right there.
Oh, yeah.
Right. As that, right. Ooh. So, yeah. So June 9th through June 18th this year. So you can go to MSRI.org and look under their workshops. It's 10-12. So MSRI.org/workshops/1012. You find more information about that there.
And notice that the Center for Minorities in Mathematical Sciences is a sponsor. So hint, hint, hint. They're giving credit where credit is due.
Amen to that. That's right. That is absolutely correct.
And I believe soon we also have USTARS, so Underrepresented Students in Topology and Algebra Research Symposium. That's coming up at ISERM, so check that out.
Excellent.
And then we also want you to sign up for stuff on the center. Please check out the blog, of course, subscribe to our podcast, and then hit us up on Twitter at Math Uncensored and at Minority Math.
All right, people, are we good?
Are we good? Yeah.
I think so. You've been listening to Mathematically Uncensored, where our talk is real and complex.
And never discreet.
Later, people.
All right. Bye.